Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, March 12th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, winter weather warnings and advisories in effect across North Coast. Supervisor Bushnell on cannabis permit revocations. And state agency heads uneasy about prospects for 2025 water year. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Winter storm warnings and advisories are currently in place across the North Coast, as rainfall may turn to snowfall at higher elevations. Meteorologist Doug Boucher with the National Weather Service in Eureka shares more.
Yeah, we're going to have a really active weather, cold weather pattern here for at least the next couple of days. We've got a system that's moving through, the frontal boundary moved through today. They brought some really strong winds across Mendocino County and higher elevations of Humboldt County. I think we saw some gusts. There's a few reporting stations that are just around the Cape that had 75-mile-an-hour gusts. It's called Matole Road. And then there was multiple stations down in Mendocino County that had some gusts, from 40 to 50. And then there was even one station that had 80. But for the most part, the widespread heavy rain should be coming to an end here this evening. We still have this low-level circulation that's just sliding just southwest of Cape Mendocino. That should bring us another bout of rain. The main concern that we do have, and overall, I mean, even though the rain's going to be heavy, there's still a potential for some rock and mudslides, and then even some low-level flooding, some flooding in some low-lying areas.
As a result of today's precipitation and unstable terrain, Highway 36 has closed again east of Swimmer's Delight near the Devil's Picnic area at post marker 15 in Humboldt County due to increased slide activity. Currently, there is no estimated time of reopening, and it is unlikely to reopen while the inclement weather continues, adding to the area's instability.
And its boundary should slowly move to the east of us, and snow levels so far have been pretty high, above about 3,500 to 4,000 feet, probably more likely 4,000 feet with this, this warm, moist, almost, I guess it has a lot of moisture flux, but it's by definition not an AR because the duration is less than 24 hours. But we are looking at this colder air mass and this trough that's coming in behind it. And the snow levels will actually plummet tonight. And we're thinking it'll get down as low as 2,000. It might even drop down to 1,500. And generally, there's a lot more impacts as the snow level gets lower. And even though the precipitation will be showery versus widespread, you'll see, a hit-miss, precipitation here and there. And then some of those individual areas or cells could be intense and could drop heavier amounts of rain over a small area. And so our concern tonight is, the lowering snow levels in these localized regions of intense precipitation with these showers and hence the potential for impacts on roadways, ice and snow on roadways, and then just generally, like I said, icy roads.
All interior areas of Humboldt and Mendocino counties are currently under a winter weather advisory, while areas further east, including all of Trinity County, are under a winter storm warning. When asked what the difference is between the two, Boucher said,
"Snow amounts." Yeah. So basically, if you get snow as low as below 1,500 feet, really just one inch of snow is sufficient for a winter weather advisory. And then for most of our interior locations, generally anything less than about 2 to anything from around 2 to 3 inches between 1,500 to 3,000, except if you're in Trinity, then it's more. So essentially it's the snow amounts. But what I find is that sometimes it doesn't really matter. If it hits a travel corridor and right at a certain, the impacts can be just as great as if. But I think, generally with a winter storm warning, you're going to have a lot more snow. That's the main difference is the amount of snow. That's forecast. And right now what we have in there for even for tomorrow night, Thursday night into Friday, is just barely just above the winter storm criteria, if not just an advisory, winter weather advisory. So that's the main difference is the snow amounts. So 2 to 4 inches versus 5 or 6 inches, you know, is the difference.
While interior residents should prepare for snow accumulation, coastal areas will also experience hazardous conditions into the weekend.
And then another concern we have is the potential for a hail coming in with this, you know, with this cold, this what I call a modified maritime polar air mass coming in from the, you know, the northeastern Pacific. And so that could bring us the potential for small hail out at the coast. So, you know, I don't know if you've ever had an experience, you know, driving in, you know, these hail showers. It's really surprising how quickly road conditions can change. You know, all of a sudden you're driving along and, you know, it's just raining and it just quickly, rapidly changes over to hail. And next thing you know, you're driving on ice. And that's how quickly it happens. So that's another thing we're concerned with tonight and then tomorrow morning is the potential for just hail showers and rapidly changing road conditions. We have good weather coming. I mean, we should see a break here Thursday evening, but we got another potentially more impactful storm coming in there Thursday night and Friday. So, yeah, look out for more low elevation snowfall and be careful driving out there. That's the main key message is at this point. You know, it's low snow levels and not a whole lot of snow, but still enough to create some impacts. And then we should see a break here as we get into Saturday.
For an up-to-the-minute weather forecast, you can visit weather.gov/EKA. In tonight's edition of County Conversations, our monthly check-in with Humboldt County Supervisors, we speak with Michelle Bushnell, who represents the 2nd District, which covers the communities along the Highway 101 corridor from Benbow to Fortuna, extending east to Bridgeville and west to Shelter Cove. Good afternoon, Supervisor Bushnell. Yesterday was a jam-packed supervisors meeting with the board revoking 21 cannabis permits for failure to pay taxes, the tweaking of the short-term rental ordinance, and updates in permitting for properties classified on ag lands, and agreed to allow Sheriff Hunsell to hire new employees despite the hiring freeze. Can you share an overview of these decisions?
Sure. So March 11th meeting, we talked about an STR ordinance update, revocation of some cannabis permits, hiring of a PIO officer for Sheriff Hunsell. Lots of things. An ag preserve came through, a couple ag preserve contracts came through. The one thing I really want to talk about is the STR ordinance. I did not vote for the updates on the ordinance. The reason I didn't is because Supervisor Wilson made a motion to require anything over 2.5 acres to have a special permit. And what the intent of the ordinance update was those 5 acre minimum parcels that are out there in Carlotta, Hydesville, Palo Verde, Conant Creek area, in a lot in my district, a lot in Supervisor Madrone's district. 5 acres is not enough to ranch on, so you don't qualify for a farm stay, and you shouldn't have to get a special permit that costs you $2,500. The answer at the end is going to be the same. So I did not agree with that at all. And I was very vocal about it. I'd hoped that my board members would come around, but they did not. I just don't think it's right to charge somebody else, you know, $2,500 for a permit that normally would be $160 when the answer is going to be the same. And it also puts a lot of stress on the planning department. It's a lot of extra work for them. And that was an update. And then also there was an update about a Category 3 road and some exceptions, which we don't have. Currently, the ordinance says Category 4. We don't have. Some of our county roads aren't even Category 4. So that update stayed the same. And then also there was another update, 600 feet from center of a residence to out 600 feet would require a special permit for the STR and 600 feet circumference, which I also didn't agree with. I thought the 300 feet was efficient. In the ordinance previously, it said as the crow flies, which is which way does a crow fly? So that's not very good language. So that was an update. A lot of people get confused when like Sheriff Hunsell brings he'll bring an exception to the hiring freeze and they are like saying, why is he getting an exception? Well, the exception is because he has that position budgeted And so it's not an unbudgeted position. He's not asking for extra money. He's asking for us to make the exception within his budget. He's going to be hiring a PIO, public information officer, which is so critical for Humboldt County and for people to get information. So I'm glad that that went through. And technically, you know, I'm not the expert in his department. We give him said amount of monies, and it's his job to work within those monies. So the other thing is that we revocated 12 or 21 permits yesterday. That means we suspended them, not suspended them. They're gone. And that was for Measure S taxes. And those 21 had not entered into a payment program, and additionally, they owed the Planning and Building Department monies. And so we made an exception for one permit that did not owe Measure S, because according to board ordinance, it could be suspended for non-payment or non-contract for payment on Measure S, but not necessarily for planning and building fees. There is something in the ordinance that says if you don't pay your planning and building fees and you're 6 months behind, you can be revocated. This is the first batch of permits that are coming through. There are probably 200 plus that did not start a payment plan with the tax treasurer.
How much collective debt did these 21 permit holders have? And to be clear, now that the permits have been revoked, if these people wanted to legally cultivate again, what would that process look like?
Sure. So I don't know what the cumulative debt was. Some of them didn't owe very much, which surprised me. One of them was $1,000. So I think that these permits have been non-existent for some time. I also asked that Director Ford bring an update whether any of them had a state permit. They did not. And so the process, unfortunately, is now those permits are dead and they cannot cultivate with those permits. However, they can apply for a new permit and start all over again, which is very costly. And I do see in the future that possibly, you know, maybe our board taking something up there. So, you know, per lawsuit, the Measure S taxes is not attached to APN numbers any longer. It's attached to permit holders. So there is no way to track that Measure S on an APN. So if a new property applies for a permit, that property doesn't owe Measure S. I don't know, like a new person that owed past Measure S could technically get their license revocated and apply for a new one. It's kind of a slippery hole there.
You mentioned that there are 200 others that could be facing revocation. As the only supervisor that is also a cultivator, what message do you have for these people or LLCs before it is too late?
So March 25th, the board is going to be taking up this discussion, and I have mixed emotions because I feel that people that... The Board of Supervisors sent this message out a year and a half ago. Get into a payment plan, $100, make regular payments, whether that be $100, $50, whatever you could afford. There wasn't a set amount. And so for the people that didn't make an effort, business is business. I don't get to not pay my bills at my clothing store, which is failing, by the way, in Southern Humboldt. And if I don't pay those bills or my business permit, I don't get to do business. And so while I am sympathetic to the market conditions, these Measure S bills are from 3 and 4 years ago. And, you know, you've had time to make some kind of a commitment to a payment plan. And so I think, you know, Sheriff Hansel made a statement yesterday that, you know, that these people, like what we revocated yesterday, made no effort, made no communication. And the ones that are making the effort, making their Measure S, making those payments, are the ones that, you know, should be rewarded. And I somewhat agree with that. I know that there are circumstances where permits had to do compliance work and they had a deadline on that compliance work. And a lot of that compliance work is a hefty lift and very expensive, like culvert repair, construction of roads, you know, updates on your property. And so I think that there could be, if you see a farm had $40,000 in Measure S, but they had $100,000 that they had to do on their compliance, and they did that work. I think there could be an exception there. So it is a very touchy subject, and I don't wish to be the determination for anybody to be out of business when they're trying or for their life's work to go down the tubes. But I also know that you can call, you can make arrangements. If you paid $100 and you made $100 a month payments, it's an effort. That's, I think, what the supervisors are looking for.
And Supervisor Bushnell, there's always a lot more to discuss, but with just 1 minute on the clock, I wanted to switch gears and ask about the updated fire hazard severity zone maps. I know Mendocino County is currently soliciting feedback and public comment from the community to submit to CAL FIRE. Have you or the other supervisors been briefed on these updated maps? And if so, what do they mean for fire danger in the county, insurance rates, and other related issues?
So we haven't been updated yet, but I know that what this means is that the CAL FIRE expanded area is designated as high and very high fire hazard zones. This is for creation of stricter fire safety requirements. What this is going to do is be harder for people to build in those higher fire zones. Now, I don't know, you know, I'll reference my own ranch. I am TPZ and ag zoned. The lower portion of my ranch is all fields, although it's mountainous fields, but it is not a lot of trees. And so the chance of a wildfire from my timber coming down there, yes, it could happen, but it is not like building in the middle of my timber. Although the fire severity zone includes the entirety of the ranch. And so I think that it's going to be more stricter in very rural areas and very outlying areas to get a building permit to build those homes. What makes me feel icky about it is folks are going to build their home, and then you're not going to have those things like maybe, you know, a metal roof or maybe putting hardy plank on. And so it has happened all over Humboldt County, especially in southern Humboldt, when you're denied a building permit and that's the only land you have to live on, they're going to build their homes anyway. So then what happens? So it makes me kind of feel like, we need a common ground here.
Thank you so much, Supervisor Bushnell.
Thank you.
That concludes tonight's edition of County Conversations. If you have a question you would like asked, you can submit it to news@kmud.org. Following our interview with Supervisor Bushnell, we calculated that the total amount of delinquent Measure S taxes from the 21 farms that lost permitting yesterday is nearly $355,000, not including administrative fees. That leaves $13,645,000 in unpaid taxes, assuming that the county's estimate of $14 million in unpaid Measure S taxes is accurate. Michelle Bushnell stated that another 200 permits are up for revocation. KMUD News reached out to John Ford of the Humboldt County Planning and Building Department for more information. However, we have yet to hear back as of news time. KMUD News will bring you more on this later this week. KMUD is currently holding its spring membership drive with the theme Education by the People for the People. This week, KMUD News is highlighting this theme and those who put it into action here on the North Coast and beyond. Sigur Bjorn brings you the details of tonight's spotlight.
Del Arte International is a center for theater training, research, and performance based in Blue Lake. The center has been training actors in stagecraft, touring internationally, and hosting an annual summer festival. KMUD's Lauren Schmidt spoke to Tony Fumler, the head of training programs at the Del Arte.
Del Arte is a 50-year-plus institution in Humboldt County that has been a center and home for physical theater training, and really looking at the different ways actors can use their bodies in space to tell stories, along with words, along with music, along with everything else, but really connect to their body as an expressive tool and also as a center for people making their own work. Del Arte has evolved through the ages, and They're with different artists running the place in different times. That has been many different things, which has included different kinds of telling the stories of Humboldt County in both summer festival shows and winter shows. It's been partnering with various community members to really dig into lots of different sides of stories and conflicts that may be a part of our history, as well as touring the world internationally. We continue to seek out and develop partnerships with lots of different organizations and try and find ways to welcome various people in to be part of our training, part of our audience. And our annual summer festival really can't be beat for bringing lots of people together with the Folklife Festival that we host, as well as the shows that we bring in and produce. We've got a lot going on as the spring progresses. We're currently at the end of our first week of a solo performance intensive, where eight different artists are coming to get farther into making their solo show. And we'll have a showcase of those things on March 15th of their works in progress, small little snippets. And as we say, the audience is the final teacher. So it'll really help them kind of understand what they've got and also take that away to the next round of iteration that they'll do on making that. And the teacher, Michelle Matlock, is a frequent guest faculty here. Incredible human, lovely clown, and it will be doing some rehearsals for her show, which we're presenting. It's called The Mammy Project. That'll be opening on World Theater Day, March 27th, and going for three nights. And it's going to be an amazing show, kind of looking at the stereotype and trope of the mammy in American culture and how that has played out and how she kind of deconstructs that. And coming up a little bit later on May 3rd, we'll have Makanu playing here. And then we're getting ready to announce things for our summer festival. And along with our summer festival, we'll also have three different summer classes, including a short clown week-long intensive led also by Michelle. Then she'll partner up with faculty Julie Douglas for 2 weeks of healthcare clowning about how to use clowning in places of healing. And then we'll have a three-week summer intensive. So yeah, we're excited. A lot of stuff going on. We have historically sustained ourselves through large ebbs and flows of the economy, like every other arts organization. And what it always combines is investment from the community in the firm in the form of sponsorships or donations, as well as raising money through grants, seeking additional funding from philanthropists, as well as the tuition and ticket prices that we bring in. And right now we're still hoping, asking folks if they'd like to help sponsor our season, which includes our summer festival and winter show, and they can find all of that online. Yes, we are accepting volunteers to help at some of our events. It just takes a little bit of training and some commitment, and you too can be a part of it, kind of see some of the interior workings. And we love meeting new people who are interested in the work that we do and can help us keep moving forward.
That was Tony Fumler, the head of training programs at Del Arte in Blue Lake. You can learn more about the theater, their current shows, and flagship summer festival at delarte.com. My name is Sigurd Bjørn, reporting for KMOD.
In state news, state agency heads uneasy about prospects for 2025 water year. KPFA's Vic Bedoyan reports.
California's Natural Resources Agency Secretary Wade Crowfoot acknowledged that climate whiplash and a warmer, drier weather system are the driving forces in the state's water supply and allocation decisions. He added that the state is also facing uncertainty due to the massive cuts to federal agencies that California interacts with.
There's a lot happening across our federal agencies and our federal government that I think some would very much consider destabilizing. We're watching major staff cuts to our federal partners and our federal agencies. We're trying to understand what the impacts of those staff cuts are and where we can be helpful to maintain water supply, water security, and public safety.
Department of Water Resources head Carla Nemeth reported that snowpack and reservoir conditions in the northern state are above normal for now, but the south has seen fewer storms and Sierra snowpack is only at 70% of normal there. She said the rainy season is getting shorter, and that presents challenges for the future.
That snowpack is really less reliable as traditional storage that it used to be. It lasted us throughout the spring and in big water years into the summer. So the way in which our ambient temperatures are shrinking the wet season and also starting to transition in terms of the role of reservoirs and groundwater basins versus snowpack in our most durable storage is starting to express itself.
State Water Board Chair Joaquin Esquivel described progress made to help disadvantaged communities have safe drinking water. He said the population without clean water has been cut in half, but there are still 800,000 people in need. Another challenge, he said, was getting rid of contamination in the water.
Whether it's, you know, chromium 6 or PFAS that's coming down the line, we know that there are emerging threats to the quality of our drinking water, and we need to keep a focus on all of our water systems, but especially those smaller systems that have a hard time adjusting to new maximum contaminant levels or the pressures of climate change and drought.
Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross said the ag economy is robust, but facing market challenges as well as climate change impacts. She stated that groundwater pumping restrictions will increase farming costs that could hurt small farmers and take land out of production. Ross voiced trepidation over the federal agency cuts to farm programs and more.
The other area I'm very concerned about is how much agricultural research is funded through the USDA, through the Agricultural Research Service, as well as tremendous amounts of investment there at health and other places that are really important for our researchers and our universities. We need new knowledge every day and translate that to our end users to be able to cope with the complexity of the challenges we face now.
With the state's fisheries in constant crisis and fish species in trouble, Chuck Bonham, director of California's Fish and Wildlife Agency, had good news along with the bad. He cited several restoration projects to help restore salmon, but in the main salmon fishery of the Sacramento watershed, he had a grim assessment.
The reality is the numbers are still not looking good. As we sit right now at the beginning of March, the estimated model abundance return of fall run salmon in the Sacramento, the numbers are lower than they were the last 2 years. And we know the last 2 years, the federal process ended up with a closure.
That's harsh news for the Bay Delta and Pacific Ocean commercial and recreational fishing industries that are so important to the state's economy. That, along with possible changes to federal environmental rules, underscore the insecurity facing the state's natural resources. Vic Bedoyan reporting for KPFA News and KFCF Radio.
In national news, the White House downplays stock market plunge, calling it transitionary. Alex Gonzalez with Public News Service reports.
Some people are going to make great deals by buying stocks and bonds and all the things they're buying. I think we're going to have an economy that's a real economy, not a fake economy. Who's a fake economy?
President Donald Trump is now saying there won't be a recession after refusing to rule one out Sunday on Fox. All three major indexes dropped sharply after his weekend comments and after he threatened but then walked back a doubling of tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum. The White House now argues the U.S. is experiencing a period of economic transition and calls the market volatility just blips. But Trump's approval rating is already taking a hit as voters across the country grow concerned. House Republicans passed a stopgap funding bill Tuesday in an effort to avoid an end-of-the-week government shutdown. Jared Golden of Maine was the only Democrat to vote yes, and Thomas Massey of Kentucky, the only Republican no vote. Speaker Mike Johnson is pressing for Democratic support in the Senate.
Falls on the desk of Chuck Schumer. He must determine whether he wants to fund the government, do the responsible thing, or whether he wants to shut the government down.
The U.S. will be restoring military aid and intelligence sharing with Ukraine after the nation agreed to a 30-day ceasefire proposal. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says Russia should accept it now that Ukraine has.
Today, we made an offer that the Ukrainians have accepted, which is to enter into a ceasefire and into immediate negotiations to end this conflict in a way that's enduring and sustainable and accounts for their interests, their security, their ability to prosper as a nation.
Ukraine targeted Moscow with drones Tuesday. Russia has begun attacks intended to retake territory in its Kursk border region. France and other European nations have begun meetings on assembling a possible peacekeeping force. The Department of Education is starting its expected mass layoffs, with a third of the 4,000 employees getting the axe. Janine Nelson with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund says Trump's plan to eliminate the agency is a mistake.
Our country is at an inflection point, and so is American education. We can build a system in which all students can thrive, or allow our schools to remain spaces of division and inequality.
A new report commissioned by faith leaders highlights moral issues in administration plans to cut federal programs to pay for extending tax cuts that mostly go to the wealthy. Author Karen Dolan with the Institute for Policy Studies points to a House budget resolution that would slash $900 billion for Medicaid.
92% of people who receive Medicaid work either full-time or half-time, or have disabilities, are over age 65, are taking care of children or elderly adults, or are attending school.
Republicans argue the tax cuts boost the economy. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Sigur Bjorn, Vic Bedoyan, Suzanne Potter, and Alex Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605. Or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.